We've got a gentleman, Mark Johnson, writes for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and he does a kind of a science, health, fitness, but wellness, but also beyond all that, in sort of every area of life. He's won a Pulitzer Prize for his writing. Mark Johnson is here with us right now, somewhere in this room. There he is. Did you bring it? How are you? Thanks for coming. How was the driving? Okay, you drove up from Milwaukee.
Yeah. Wow.
Road okay?
Yeah. If we were tired, we were going to pull over, but it's okay.
They're taking out that Highway 100 bridge or something. Is that still? You got to go around that.
Yeah. No, I think it was pretty much of a straight shot.
Straight shot. Did you bring the Pulitzer? I asked
you
to bring the Pulitzer.
I did. Now.
You
there's
did?
Kind
you
of a there's kind of a controversy in the household because they gave me two things, and I don't know which one is actually the Pulitzer.
Did you bring the cash, too? I want to see the cash.
That I did not bring because it no longer exists in the temporal sense. I can't remember
it's
what
a lot,
it,
though, isn't it? It was a lot. Pulitzer Prize. Feldman has Pulitzer Prize.
For distinguished radio work.
Yeah, there's no Pulitzer for that, I don't think.
No,
not
yet.
What I do. Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Isn't it sweet?
See, that might be it, but I don't know.
I would think it would be. It says Pulitzer Prize on it, 2011. A Pulitzer Prize for explanatory reporting. Can't even say that. Speaking of explaining. Mark Johnson, Kathleen Gallagher, Gary Porter, Lou Saldivar, and... Allison Sherwood. It's a little hard to read on the glass here. But
normally, you don't have to read
Mr.
stuff.
Mr. Pulitzer Prize winner. You're on my right here. I cavort with Pulitzer Prize winners, ladies and gentlemen.
This is the other thing. They give you a diploma. Yeah. It's sort of a diploma type thing. I thought. Wife maintains that's
You want this back?
Yeah.
Okay. This is the diploma they get. Okay. Columbia University. Yeah. Pulitzer Prize in Journalism for Explanatory Reporting. Isn't that very nice? Very nice. I like the glass thing a little better, but this is nice, too.
I like it.
You can leave that out. You're not going to leave that out because someone's going to grab that.
I should explain that the bag from Roundy's is not anything...
Doesn't come with it.
No, and I don't think that there's like a commercial relationship between Roundy's and Columbia or anything like that.
And what did you win that for?
It was for a series of stories on... child who lives actually fairly close to here in Monona, named Nick Volker. He had this very rare disease that actually they'd never seen it before. I don't think it's not now named Nick Volker disease, but I believe he's the only one in the world who has had it. The story traced how they were able to diagnose and do something about it, which was. They used genome sequencing. They actually went into his full genetic script, the 3.2 billion letters that make up everything about who we are, pretty much. And it was, in his case, they did kind of an abbreviated version of it. They went into the parts of the script that make proteins, because those are
protein-related disease?
Yeah, most diseases actually are from problems with proteins. Either they're not made right, or they make too little, too much, or none at all, that kind of thing.
So they sequenced his gene, or a large part of it, looking at proteins, and did they find what they were looking for?
Yeah, and in his case, they did find it. It was, and the incredible thing was it was down to a single notch on that of those 3.2 billion points. It was one letter that was off. It was like the most ridiculous typo, that you can imagine. And it had these tremendous consequences because he had a really severe illness. I won't go into some of that. It's pretty gross, but it was very, very serious. He was pretty much dying.
Yeah. And were they able to help him on that basis?
Yeah, that was the other amazing thing about it. They were able to craft a treatment. They'd been going back and forth on whether to use something that was like a bone marrow transplant. And the doctors who are specialists in bone marrow transplants said, hey, you haven't diagnosed this disease. You don't know what it is for sure. We can't approve a bone marrow transplant to fix something when we don't even know the problem.
What it is,
So they waited for a diagnosis. When this diagnosis came along, when they said, hey, we know what the actual problem is, they proved doing a bone marrow transplant. It was actually, they used umbilical cord blood, which is kind of the same sort of stuff, and it's now been, I think, 4 years or so, and 5 years, and I think he's doing fine.
Well, that's fantastic. That's a terrific story. And how did you get involved in this story yourself? I mean, it's
actually it was one that my colleague on the writing end of it, Kathleen Gallagher. She's a business reporter, and one of her sources, she was schmoozing, talking him up at the end of a phone call, and they were saying, oh, you know, there's all this stuff that they're doing at the medical college, you know, they're doing this, they're doing that, and they sequenced all the genes of this this boy, and it was lucky for us that Kathleen's done enough stuff to do with, you know, biomedical technology that she knew this was something very unusual, and after the phone call, she came running over, and we'd worked on some stories to do with swine flu and vaccines, and she said, you know, I just found out about this. This is really weird. We should check into it. And that was sort of, it took us pretty much about 3 or 4 weeks just to confirm that it had actually happened. We were in the good position of when I called the people at the hospital, the media relations people, they didn't know what I was talking about, which is a good thing.
That's media relations.
Yeah. Well, if they do know what you're talking about, then everything gets shaped, and you get to see this person, but not that one, and you can't ask.
A message they're promoting at that point.
Right.
Yeah. So, and so were you influential, actually, in this happening then at that point? Or the sequencing had been done already?
The sequencing had been done, but they hadn't yet given him the treatment.
Yeah.
So it was actually kind of a risky point for us to become involved in this story, because if the treatment had gone wrong, and they didn't know for sure it was going to happen, if he had passed away, this would not be a story that the hospital or the medical college would really want told.
No.
And it would be really painful for the parents. But they were willing to sort of let us along and take the risk of, you know, whatever happened, happened.
Yeah. Well, that's an amazing story. And what a good use of journalism.
it was a lot of fun to work on, because one of the amazing things was at the very beginning, the first interviews we did, we went and talked to a couple of doctors, and doctors use a lot of technical jargon, and it was about an hour-long interview, and we came out of it, and Kathleen and I both sort of shrugged, and she said, did you understand any of that? And I said, well, I think I got about half a dozen words. I know what they mean. And, you know, it sort of went from there. We bought some books to try and read up about DNA.
Yeah. Do you have a medical background, or do you have a science background?
No.
You don't?
In fact, I almost flunked biology in high school.
Yeah.
I had to come after school and dissect a little shark. That was the only way the teacher would pass
really,
me.
Made up with a shark and makeup.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess there was a little connection.
Yeah. So your major in school was journalism, or
it was English literature.
English literature, okay, and that doesn't pan out. I tried that too.
Yeah, no, it was
not a big call.
Yeah, I was. My roommate was in computer science, and I think all his friends were in either computer science or engineering, and they kind of used to regularly point at me and sort of chuckle or laugh uproariously.
Ah, who's laughing now?
Exactly. I showed them.
Where'd you go to school? Where was it?
I went to University of Toronto.
Toronto. Oh, excellent. And yet your column is largely medical science, that sort of thing.
That's right. So I just lucked into it.
Lucked in? Was there an opening for a medical reporter?
Well, after a while, what happened was I realized that I was getting, I was actually interested in science. I mean, you tend to, when you're younger, you're not interested in the things you're really bad at for obvious reasons. You know, not fun to be humiliated time and time again.
No, you got marriage for that, you know.
Right, exactly. But, you know, and after a while, what happened was I noticed the stories that I was kind of gravitating towards were ones that happened to be science-related. Mm-hmm. I had worked in Providence, and I ended up doing a big story on a blue whale that had been pulled ashore, and all these scientists from up and down the coast had come to this smelly big carcass that was in the New Bedford landfill.
Is that one of those exploding whales you read about?
No. Interestingly enough, it didn't explode, thankfully.
Yeah.
But all the, I mean, it smelled rank enough as it was. Yeah. I mean, all the clothes that I wore then, you know, threw away, and I hope they've been burned because it was really bad.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing was that all these scientists were basically cutting off different parts of the whale to take back with them to study. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody got the eye, somebody got the eardrum. There's a woman in New York who got the larynx from the whale. It's like 11 feet long.
And she lives in New York.
And she lives in New York. You know,
she's got 90 square feet. Where is she going to put a larynx?
Yeah, I think, too, that a lot of the tenant, the co-op, they have rules about those sort of things. Like, that it's not a good
thing. It's implied if it's not stated that no whale larynxes.
Yeah, especially when they've been out for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can picture a hamburger meat that's been around.
No, come on.
for a whole season.
And the question was, why are these blue whales grounding themselves? Or that was
more, well, actually, no.
What were they dying from?
The question I had was what the scientists intended to learn from this.
What they were doing, actually.
Yeah, why do you want to...
fundamental.
Why do you want to take back a whale's eardrum or, you know, its eye or its larynx? The woman who took back the larynx, she was a scientist at Cedars-Sinai, and she was studying sudden infant death syndrome, which involves a shift in the larynx in humans.
Uh-huh.
I thought this was fascinating. I mean, never would have had a clue.
Yeah.
But she actually had a collection of larynxes. Mammal larynxes. Yeah, it was in the basement of Cedars-Sinai.
Remind me never to go in the basement of Cedars. That sounds just...
Yeah, I hope they had... I can't remember whether they had preservation like things, but
hopefully
some kind of refrigeration.
Tanks, these things floating in them.
And you wouldn't want to see like water like melting through the under the door or something.
So your article about that was really about not having science expertise,
right?
And being able to look at it and wonder what's this all about,
you know? Right? And finding out kind of what they were also putting together basically the story of why this blue whale had died, because it's an endangered species. They were almost kind of doing like a whale autopsy, trying to figure out what it was that had killed it. And
right.
It turned out it was likely it was this ship that plowed it basically through half the ocean into Providence.
Yeah. And what's good about your, are they columns or are they blogs? They call them blogs.
A lot of them are blogs.
Yeah. Is a blog just shorter than a column?
I think so, yeah. And I think also there's different levels of responsibility. When you say blog, expectations are a lot lower, which is probably a good idea.
And they can disown you. It's just
exactly. You could say it's just a blog. Of course, there were mistakes.
Mistakes were made and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about what you write is that it comes from a lot of times you won an award for ethics as well, because you actually get involved in the story, which is a little bit maybe unusual. For this type of reporting, let's say a science or a health columnist doesn't usually get involved in it, but you do a lot of getting involved.
Well, getting involved in terms of that I interview people a lot, and I go and if I can, I go and watch in the lab when scientists do stuff there and point at stuff and say, what's that and what's that? And that kind of stuff. And how does that work?
And even that long piece, which I know is not a blog, it was about the cadavers and meeting your cadaver.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating because you think about kids who go to medical school and all this stuff, and they're still kids, actually, when they're going to medical school. They're pretty young people. My brother went, and he didn't have a problem with his cadaver, but a lot of people did, a lot of fainting and that sort of thing, and just a little bit strange feelings about you. Well, here's this person, former person, and dealing with it, but the explores the whole idea about medical school and what these young people go through when they have to deal with.
I really love the idea of all these students sort of having to kind of work out their feelings about death at a time when they're so young and they're not really thinking that way. And it's so kind of personified because, basically the room that I went to, and I go to it like probably once every week or once every couple of weeks, it was like a huge, almost like an airplane hangar room. And there's like 40 tables with different bodies on each of them. And, some are women and some are men and some are huge, like people that are, almost over the table, and some are very small, petite people. And very quickly, there's no joking around. I mean,
you would think there'd be some horseplay, but there's not.
There's no horseplay, no. And they stress that because, they don't want people, picking up the cadavers and dancing with them or stuff like that because, of YouTube, and it would get out and somebody would be upset.
Oh, my God. Terrible.
But actually, the real point is that it's such an incredible act to donate your body, knowing that people are going to kind of depart, that they want people to understand how valuable that is to these students. And and it does kind of make sense that when you come in to have your appendix out, that you'd want them to have seen an appendix somewhere before.
Yeah.
You know?
And for these students to understand who these people were that have made this
right.
gift to them. And the woman's name is
Nana Foch?
Yes.
She was a person who's going to be...
She's going to be, but wasn't her husband already donated?
Her husband had already donated.
Yeah.
And it was really neat having her perspective. And she was a really lovely woman, completely, I think, eye-opening for a lot of these students because, she was getting on in years, but she was actually telling them, it's okay to be old. I really like old age. I'm not afraid of dying. She even told them that, she said the only thing that worried her was, she said, I don't know if I have enough brownie points to go up, And I thought that was kind of...
Yeah, to go straight up.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people might think that. I probably will when the time comes, but...
And then there's a whole profile of her life and her life with her husband and all that stuff, and who they were, where they're from, and various events in their life. So you're actually dealing with a human being in the process. But, does that somehow make it harder to know that you're dealing with, suddenly this is not a cadaver,
mm-hmm.
it's a person, and I would think it would sort of make it harder almost to deal with.
I thought so too at the beginning, but then the more I thought about it, a lot of doctors actually do get to know things about their patients. Mm-hmm. If you're a heart surgeon and you're opening somebody up, you have enough meetings, even though, a lot of appointments now are 10 or 20 or, 30 minutes at most. You ask about the kids, what do you do for a living?
Yeah.
And so it's pretty hard to be completely detached, which is probably a good idea. You don't want to, the person who's opening you up to feel like they're cutting into a mannequin. I mean, that would be a little disconcerting.
And anyway, that's what doctors should be attuned to.
Right.
Actually, considering this is not just a surgery, this is a person.
Right.
Yeah, that sort of thing. Well, that was a very interesting one to me. And I like not all the topics are this fundamental, I guess, and serious. But there are some things that almost, for example, this thing about where are kids getting bullied? You're talking about in schools and kids getting bullied, which is not strictly within the same genre.
Right, a very different thing.
But and they found that it was at schools that had anti-bullying programs.
There's a lot of very ironic scientific information that comes out, studies that tell you things where that you probably don't want to know, and that's one of them. That all these, schools my son has been at, they all have anti-bullying type programs, and I think most of what comes out of that, when you hear what they're actually teaching kids, you kind of feel like they're guessing, just like parents, And, they're doing things that sound awfully good, like they get the bully to talk with the bullied and, say, I'm feeling this anger, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But in the end, it may or may not work. I mean, kids are,
Well, they say anti-bullying programs actually give bullies the tools.
Right. Actually,
so they know what to do.
Well, maybe it's like the principle, the thing that we hear often about jails, that, people learn to become better criminals when they're there. They go in maybe and, they're kind of amateurs and, maybe they haven't done very well at it. And then they see some people, oh, he's really good, Wow, I hadn't thought of that, And you if it wasn't your profession, maybe you get an inclination that it'd be a good way to go.
It's sort of, makes you wonder about all programs everywhere of every sort, though. Doesn't it? I mean, it's like this is rather.
Yeah, actually, now that we mention it, it does kind of. I mean, I don't want to get across the message that learning would be a bad thing because teachers are going to teach you stuff that'll end up backfiring anyway.
Yeah.
So can't win, don't try.
This behavioral stuff, though. I mean, it's
behavioral stuff
a lot trickier than we think it is.
Yeah, it is. Another one that was similar to this was the video game one, where for years we've heard stuff about how worried people are about violence in video games. Mm-hmm. And there was a study recently that found that what got kids the most upset wasn't all the violence and exploding heads and bodies on the video games. It was losing.
Yeah, losing.
You know, that kind of makes sense, actually. I don't know why we didn't think of that first, you know. It's kind of a bummer.
It totally makes sense when you think about it. And it's also a generational thing because, we had video, but we had, you know.
We had Pong.
Pong, you know. But everything's so realistic now. And it really, we forget that it is a game, actually. Even these shooter things, which are, to me, so such a bad idea. You know, I mean, let's have shooter games of every sort and every genre, you know.
Well, even the ones, I used to play with my son, the only one that I ever learned was hockey.
Yeah.
And he had obviously mastered it way beyond my ability. And just for, you know, fun, he would check my players, sometimes my goalie, like just to humiliate me, like just bam, 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 just, you know, in a way it was sort of satisfying because it was like giving him a, you know, an extra birthday present because he got to watch me helplessly sinking down along the boards.
Yeah. You check your dad is a very important fundamental Freudian thing to be able to do.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And he just smashed me. Bad.
And what do you conclude from that? That it was, as far as video games and your son.
I guess what I conclude is that he came away thinking, you know, sometimes we worry that our kids will think, you know, that we're sort of unapproachably awesome, mm-hmm. you know, which is a tremendous delusion, but occasionally we might have that.
Yeah.
And I think he got exactly the opposite message, which was that, hey, you know, when it comes to technology, you know, this guy's just like any other jerk, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, he's had to teach me how to use my own cell phone, which is pretty humiliating.
And I got to say, I'm interested when we finally figure out what cell phone, constant cell phone use and texting and head in your phone whenever actually is changing. I think it's actually changing evolution or something.
I think so.
Or at least behavioral.
Yeah, I'm afraid it's making it's changing evolution in that it's so around us that older people like myself who have not adapted as well, that there's some sort of evolutionary thing we're kind of getting shunned. We won't be able to survive.
Yeah, well, you know? But I mean for the user itself because they're really and now they got these things. Facebook just bought this thing where you're actually immersed in a thing, a screen over your head.
Oh my God!
That encompasses your head. And you're obviously you're not hearing anything, you're not seeing anything around mm-hmm. you, so you're totally in a virtual world. I mean, this has got to have ramifications, I think.
I think so. I mean, what if you go in that world and you like it better? I mean,
yeah. And then you're in Tron. What if you're Tron suddenly and you're in there in this stupid old video game?
And then you come out and try to do that in the real world.
No, I don't know the implications, but I mean, it's different.
It is.
And so. So the stuff is—it's all great though, and some of the stuff is a little lighter than the others. Like the what was this? What was the sex one?
Oh yeah.
What was your sex one? You remember your sex one?
Oh, that was the one about it was some experiment with mice.
Male mice and don't let pain slow down their sex drive.
Right.
Yeah.
And this kind of made sense. I wrote this up just because it gave me a chuckle. Basically, they found that male mice. When they inflict pain on them under scientific conditions, so it's not like...
So it's okay.
Yeah, it's okay, yeah. Right. That they don't... it doesn't deter them in their sex drive, which will come as a surprise to...
No one.
No, yeah. Nobody at all. But it
little
sort of...
pain is good, so I'm
right,
saying,
I I think it might just only confirm what the female of the species has known forever.
Yeah.
You know, which was that, you know... Well, just that our priorities are different might be the best word.
Okay, well, I guess that summarizes that finding. Well, I want to thank you, Mark, for stopping in and bringing your stuff with you and your stories as well, and congratulations on everything that you've achieved.
Thank you very much.
You are achieving, and great to meet you.
It's been a real honor.
Mark Johnson, ladies and gentlemen, from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and the world. And the world at large.